This is Matins.
And so we cross over to CPLO, that's Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office in Cape Town, and we speak to Advocate Mike Pothier. Good morning, Advocate Mike. Good morning, Advocate Mike. I can hear me. I don't know if you can hear me. Okay. Advocate Mike, good morning. And you know what? Advocate Mike is actually speaking to us. We just can't hear him. So I think we'll quickly do this. Let's see how that works out there. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Oh, yes. Now you're nice and clear.
Okay, that's better.
Yes, and we have, I'm with Robert Doyle in the studio.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. And you?
Good. Very well. Thank you. And nice to meet you on radio.
Yeah.
Radio Veritas, the birthday radio station.
Is it birthday today?
Well, this whole month of October, we're celebrating Radio Veritas' birthday, yes. So what this means, Mike, is that you are expected to sing Happy Birthday the first thing as we... I'm pulling your leg, okay. So the Matlanga Commission, of course, has been happening. What are your thoughts so far?
Well, last week was quite different from the first couple of weeks, I think, because the head of crime intelligence, Khumalo, started to give some real incriminating evidence, WhatsApp conversations, copies of WhatsApp conversations, that began to seriously implicate the suspended police minister. Conversations between this shadowy character called Brown Mokgotsi and Kat Matlala, which indicated, nothing is proven yet, but indicated strongly that Mokgotsi had access to sensitive information from the very top of the police and the police ministry that he should not have had and was able to pass it on. So that obviously needs to be explained somehow, if it can be explained. Also importantly, I think Brigadier Khumalo started to name names. Obviously, Kat Matlala was one such name. Katie Molefe was the other name. He says these are two of the big five people involved in a major drug syndicate. Now, he must have some, I would say, strong basis for saying that, for making such an accusation, because if it's untrue, of course, then he's open to to be sued for defamation. Real, as one of the newspapers said, he put some meat on the bones. And then he fell ill, which was probably just a coincidence. But everybody, I think everybody thought, well, what's happening now? Has this man been got to somehow? And I'm not sure what exactly his illness is and when he's going to be fit again. But the commission is now in a sort of recess for a week or two, I believe. So we'll see what happens when he comes back. So, yeah, it seems to be getting a bit more serious. But we still have to hear the other side. We still have to hear from Minister Nkunu, from General Sibiya, who's the other main accused, you might say. And perhaps they have explanations for some of these things. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, hopefully there's some kind of explanation. But we wait and see, as you say. It's all been, shocking moments as you listen to this and watch the some of these messages, that have been. And I think the general feeling is we think General Mkhwanazi was right, We think General Mkhwanazi was right. But, of course, all these needs to be, tested. All this evidence needs to be tested as well.
That's true. And the terrible thing about it all is that if General Mkhwanazi and General Brigadier or General, I'm not sure, Khumalo of Crime Intelligence, if they are right, then it shows that there's rottenness and corruption right at the top of the police. If they are wrong, then it means they are spinning a story which is itself rotten and corrupt. So whoever's telling the truth in all of this, we will be left with one fact, and that is that at the top leadership of the police service, we have corruption and rottenness either way. There's no way that the story can end with everybody coming out looking good. And that is a very serious situation.
Yeah, I think let's see how that plays out. And then, Mike, just moving to NECs and COGTAs at the local government meetings, the talk fests, or is there real change that's happening now in local government?
Well, two meetings over the weekend and last week that focused on local government. The one was that the ANC's National Executive Committee met to start the process of finding its candidates for the local government elections, which will be held probably at the end of next year, November or December. And once again, the ANC has committed to finding good leaders, people who are there to serve, quality candidates, etc., etc., which is all well and good. The trouble is it's happened before. Every time we prepare for not only local government elections, but also the national and provincial elections, the ANC, along with all of the other parties, of course, promises us that it's going to find good candidates, people who are really interested in serving the people, who are qualified, experienced, and all of those good things. And yet, after the elections, we find that local government is still in a mess in most parts of the country. So, for me, this is a question of paying lip service. We know that the ANC in particular, but again, it's not only the ANC, it goes for many of the other parties, is full of factionalism. People have to be kept on board. People have to be given permissions to keep them, in the fold, or to prevent them from saying things outside of the fold. There's all sorts of patronage, favors that are owed, and so on and so on. And we also know very well that getting a seat on a town council or a city council, apart from the fact that it's, you earn a fairly decent salary, it is a stepping stone to higher office and to really powerful office. So I would not have too much faith in the promise that we're going to be flooded with these very excellent candidates. The other meeting was convened by the government itself, by the Department of Cooperative Government, Governance and Traditional Affairs, as a kind of indaba to look at the state of local government. Every year the Auditor General publishes her report in about August, outlining which municipalities have got a clean audit, which ones of them are complying with the governance standards and which are not. And we always have a very tiny percentage. I think this year it was 33 or something out of the 255 municipalities that got clean audits. So this gathering, also not the first one, was there to come up with solutions and came up with a 10-point plan that's going to be apparently put into action to address these problems. Once again, we've heard this before. We've had white papers on local government. We've had all sorts of interventions. None of them really seem to have worked very well. And I don't think it's too cynical to say that, one should not hold one's breath and expect that this new 10-point plan is going to work miracles.
Yeah, we pray that there will be something different. But as you say, that over the years we've sort of got used to the promises, as you say, from all political parties, and promises that turn out to be nothing as we move on. So we do pray for next year's elections that there will be change. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. There needs to be just compliance with what the law says. We have very, very good local government laws that set out how municipalities should work and they should conduct their affairs and their finances and so on. And you find very simply that those that adhere to those laws do well. They run clean administrations, which means they can actually address the needs of the people. And those that ignore the legal requirements are the ones which go wrong.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you for that. And then an interesting something that happened as well, Nati Matetwa, the death, which seems to be, dare I say, controversial, or there seems to be, I think, a lot of opinions coming out. Interesting to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, again, it's early days because we haven't had much, indication other than it seems 99% certain that it was a suicide. The French police have established that there was no one else in the room at the time. No one went into his room that day other than himself and so on and so on. Plus, of course, they say that he sent a message to his wife saying that he intended to take his own life. So I think, you know, one can dismiss any other speculation of skullduggery and so on. It was his decision. Why he did it, I don't know. We may never know. All sorts of different reasons. People are obviously trying to link it to his own political history and to the fact that he, at one time, was also a police minister many, many years ago, but nevertheless was fingered in a couple of commissions, was criticized in the Marikana Commission of Inquiry, has been linked to, again, some dodgy business people and all the rest of it. But I personally, you know, my and this is simply an opinion of my own, I don't know anything more than anybody else, I don't think that that presents a sufficient reason for someone to take his own life. There have been hundreds and hundreds of politicians similarly accused, having findings against them, and they don't do that. They carry on merrily. Some of them disappear from public life. Some of them get promoted and end up back in the cabinet. So I don't think that the fact that he had a couple of fingers pointed against him would have been sufficient. There could have been all sorts of personal reasons. And as I say, maybe we will never know. We have to accept it as one of those human tragedies and keep his family and himself, of course, in our thoughts and our prayers.
We do. Thank you for that. And then lastly, not taking up too much of your time, the guilty verdict for Malema. And what does this mean for the EFF? And I think the big question probably everyone is asking, will Julius Malema go to jail or will he not? Or what do you think the sentencing would be? To get your thoughts there. Thanks, Mike.
That again is difficult to say. The offence of which he was found guilty carries a mandatory prison sentence of 15 years, according to the law. However, the courts have been very reluctant to send people to jail for merely possessing a semi-automatic or automatic weapon. They usually give something like 3 years, maybe 5 years. And that, again, is usually in conditions where the weapon has been used in the commission of another crime, like a murder or an attempted murder or something. He had that weapon in his hands for a few minutes. He fired off a burst of bullets and gave it back to the security guard. So I could foresee a court taking quite a lenient view of it. But on the other hand, it wasn't just a little pistol. It was an automatic machine gun. That's an exceptionally dangerous thing to be firing around. And as a member of parliament, he will be held to a higher standard because members of the legislature, the people who make the laws, are certainly expected to obey those laws absolutely. So the courts generally expect people like him and police officers and so on who are charged with making and enforcing laws to behave at a higher level. So it is quite possible that he will get a jail sentence. He obviously will appeal it. And then we'll go through that usual, long 2 or 2.5 year period while he appeals it all the way up to the Constitutional Court. If he does end up in jail, it's going to be very bad news for his political party because there's not really anyone that, is obvious to step into the breach. He is a charismatic leader. He's built the party around himself very, very much. He has elbowed out some of his closest rivals, such as Shivambu and Ngozi and so on. So if he ends up in a prison cell for 3 years or 5 years or whatever, it could signal a sort of realignment in our politics. Might be good for the MK party, which would stand to pick up a lot of his supporters. But it's going to be quite a while before we have that outcome.
So another 2-3 years even before because as you say, he's obviously going to appeal whatever the sentencing that he gets.
It will be, if it's a straight appeal, then that might go fairly quickly. Although remember, it's a magistrate's court decision. So he first appeals it to the High Court in Bishu probably. And if he loses there, he can appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And if he loses there, he can try to appeal to the Constitutional Court. That in itself could take a few years. But if he adopts the famous Stalingrad defense of Jacob Zuma and he finds lawyers that are willing to go back over this case and pick over every tiny little procedural detail and ask for the recusal of this judge or that magistrate, etc., etc., then we could be looking at many, many years of, you know, sort of legal nonsense just aimed at keeping him out of prison, as we've experienced with Zuma.
And of course, most people saying, how come then the person that you got the gun from is not found guilty, but he is found guilty? How does the law work in this?
That person obviously had a license for that weapon. That person was a security guard acting as a bodyguard on that occasion. And so I'm 90% sure that he would have had the necessary license to carry such a weapon. I'm not sure why he was not convicted of a lesser crime of allowing an unlicensed person to take possession of the weapon. I haven't read the judgment, so I'm not sure how the magistrate dealt with that. It does seem strange. That may come out further down the line.
Okay. Anything else, Mike?
Not that I can really think of. Like I said, Madlanga Commission is now on a bit of a break. So we'll pick that one up when it starts again. But I don't think that there's anything else of huge importance coming up in this week.
And that's Advocate Mike Porthia at Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office in Cape Town, cplo.org.za. That's their website, if you'd like to know more of what they do.
Thank you, Mike, for your wonderful comments and for your time as well. Very interesting conversation, and pray that you have a blessed week.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Kanya.
Thank you very much. And so, interesting indeed. Go to cplo.org.za. For more. And the Madlanga Commission, you know, as we say, he now fell ill. That's Dade Khumalo, who's now fell ill or fallen ill. And so Madlanga Commission then is on recess for about 2 weeks. It will pick up again thereafter. But we continue to watch closely and see where this is all going with all the right evidence, of course. We'll start to see convictions and we'll start, you know, so we'll really see where it goes.
Starting to get interesting.
Really interesting.